This is the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program. My name is Stacy Stein. On today's show, teenage interns from Garfield County Prep talk with Carmen and Paula, mental health professionals from the Aspen Hope Center, and Safira from Project We Care Colorado about suicide prevention, including suggestions and strategies to identify someone who may be struggling, how to reach out, and the importance of developing and maintaining authentic relationships with our peers and family members. This is the second part of our conversation. The first part centered on self-harm and is online at azyep.org. PREP is an acronym for Personal Responsibility Education Program. They focus on healthy relationships, life skills, and adult-child communication. PREP hires summer interns who meet weekly to learn and discuss issues that are important to them. They also participate in community events, festivals, and projects, and are encouraged to have conversations about the importance of comprehensive sex education with attendees. The topic of suicide hits close to home for many people. Safira is the president and founder of Project We Care Colorado, based in Eagle. She describes how her own struggles and the challenges her peers face inspired her to start an organization with the focus of kids helping kids through tough emotional times. They are online at projectwecarecolorado.org.
Just like with my friends and everything, kind of being involved, and then it happened to me, and I was like, oh, that's not, that's just not fun, not good. And then I was kind of to the point where I was really thinking about killing myself, and then it just kind of scared me. I was like, oh, I should not do that and figure out how to turn it around. And then Olivia Ortega, I don't know if you guys heard about that, she was 12 last February. She killed herself, and it was around the same time that I was kind of losing my brain, and that just really scared me. So I got involved with we had this youth leaders council thing, and they were like, oh, you know what we should do? We should call the health providers and pretend that we have a mental illness. And I was like, that's not a good idea at all under any circumstances. So I was like, you know what we should do instead? So I ended up interviewing six of my classmates, and kind of anonymous interviews because I really like journalism. It's all about their stories, and then I presented to the Total Health Alliance last August or something like that, and everything just kind of took off because I thought the presentation was amazing, and it was just really fun to wasn't fun, but it was interesting to talk about mental health with people who were actually engaged instead of me just kind of talking to a bunch of people who really didn't want to hear what I was having to say. And that's kind of how I got involved, and it was a way that I really pulled myself out.
According to the Colorado Health Institute, suicide is the leading cause of death for 10 to 24-year-olds, and Colorado has the 10th highest suicide rate in the nation. Diana, the Garfield County PrEP program manager, asks the group how to know when someone may be at risk for suicide, and how to help.
Is there anything that you would share with the adult listeners that could help them identify when to maybe not look the other way, but to take that step closer and reach out to that young person? Is there any advice you have for the adults?
It's kind of easy to tell when they need help, because I feel like one thing that teenagers do a lot today is say, I'm going to kill myself, literally all the time. But it's also kind of hard because a lot of them say it as a joke, or if their car isn't working, they're like, oh, I'm going to kill myself now, or something like that. But if a teenager is struggling, I've noticed that they're more than likely to say something now because of all the resources and all the things that people put out to us to say that we need help. But it's also kind of hard to know when you're kidding and when you're not.
Honestly, I kind of think you just have to listen. With the I want to kill myself, sometimes I find myself saying that, and I'm like, oh, wait, I'm just joking. I have to verbally say that, because whenever my friends say that, I'm like, are you serious? Do you, I always double check, and maybe definitely double check, but you kind of just got to look for them, because I feel people are, there are some people who are totally shut down, but usually there's some sign, there's some of that, like, either verbal or just, like, metaphysical. Is that the, that's very good. I like that word. Metaphysical, like, not symptoms, but just, like, signs. And you're, like, you can, like, when you're just, you gotta look and you gotta listen, and usually there's some sort of, like, alarm, or you can tell. You just gotta be open to seeing.
Piggybacking on everything that the circle of students has talked about, that listening, most of the time kids want to talk, even if they're acting like they don't want to. One of the best ways to talk to students is not to directly address them. So go for a drive, get a Coke, and then you're looking forward and not having to look right at them. Go shoot baskets, take a walk, take a hike, walk the dog. Anything that makes it less pressured will help people talk a little more. And that's not just for students, that's for everybody. I mean, it gets a little intense when somebody's looking somebody straight in the eye and being right up in their face. That makes people not want to talk very much. But as comfortable as you can make someone and non-threatening, that helps. And if you suspect that your student is self-harming, actually look at their body. Look at their arms, look at their legs, because not everybody cuts on their arms. If they really want to keep it a secret, they're going to cut on their thighs and places like that. So you need to look. If you suspect that your student is engaged in self-harming behavior, just like all the students here said, it's not just cutting. It's risky behaviors. And those are things that you can ask straight away. Absolutely get help. There are all sorts of crisis places here in the Valley. And Hope Center is one of those. You can give us a call. It does not have to be a suicidal crisis, a crisis. And we're staffed 24/7. We'll answer your call.
I would say for parents and adults, just to piggyback on what Paula is saying, observable behaviors. You all know your friends, peers in here, you know your friends. Parents know their kids on some level. So looking for changes in behaviors, observable changes. Are they sleeping more? Are they not wanting to get out of bed? What is their mood like? Has that changed from their baseline? Are they a normal, for lack of a better word, outgoing, engaged individual, and you're finding that they're isolating more? Are you finding that they're going out? Are you hearing that they're drinking? Are you hearing that they're using? Are you hearing that they're cutting? You know, connecting with those other parents and that group that your kid is engaged with. Find out who they're interacting with. Find out who they're hanging out with. What are they doing on the weekends? Any changes in your child's behavior that's concerning, I would address head on. How are their grades in school? Talk to the teachers. Are they truant? What's their attendance? You need to get into your child's life. Monitor their social media. Take their phone. Look and see who they're talking with. Look and see what they're looking up. And I know that you all don't like that answer. But when we have parents come to us and we say to them, what sites are they interacting with? Who are they texting with? And then we'll have parents say, well, I really don't know. Our next question to the parent is, who's paying for the cell phone bill? Do you own that phone? Are you paying the bill? Then this needs to be a dialogue with your child. This needs to be an understanding with your child that I'm going to do this and we're going to have a conversation about it.
And that's one of the proponents of Garfield County Prep. One of the goals is to increase those trusted adult-child relationships so that the child has a trusted adult to go to talk to. And around sexual health, that tends to make parents really nervous and uneasy, so they kind of wait for the talk. And we advocate that it should be a lifelong conversation. And the more you're having ongoing open conversations with your children, especially if you start at a young age, yes, they're going to shut down a little bit more as teenagers, but if you've already created that atmosphere of trust and openness, then when you do ask questions, they're going to be more likely to share with you what they're holding inside. if your child is already a teenager and you haven't created that pattern, there's no such thing as it's too late. Start at any time. Again, using television shows, media, what their friends are going through, the car ride. With teenagers, what I have found is they need a place to be their goofy, annoying selves. Sorry, teenagers. And that's okay, because we were all there. We all needed that space. And when I have given them that space and not tried to be a part of their conversation and activity 100% of the time, and I step out a little bit and I shut my mouth more often than I'm used to, then I find when you do want to interject or you do have a question or you do have something to add, they're much more willing to listen and then to share. So sometimes I see adults trying to be one of the teens, and I'm not sure that that's really the best avenue to getting them to open up with you. And if you try and you say, oh, well, I tried and they just wouldn't talk, don't stop trying, because I think they're testing you to see, are you legit? And if you try and they don't open up and then you stop trying, I think you've just told them that you're not authentically interested in what's going on in their lives. So just keep those lines of conversation going in a non-judgmental, non-accusatory way, and I think they'll open up to you more.
Looking through the phone thing, do you mean like kind of like sitting down with the kid and being like, I'm going to look through your phone?
I think it should be an ongoing dialogue from the very minute that you get that phone. And there are going to be limits and boundaries and restrictions around it. We have kids present to us who are clinically depressed, who are wanting to harm themselves. Some kids want to die. And we're talking about basic everyday needs: eat, sleep, food, right? Eat, sleep, drink, basic needs. A lot of our kids are not sleeping. How many of you guys last night got more than 6 hours of sleep? We see a lot of adolescents and youth who do not sleep more than 6 hours a night. Why? Because they're up playing video games or they're on their phones. And so when we meet with them and we talk with them about health, sleeping is one of them, right? You guys are developing. You're growing, and your body needs rest. And so when you're introducing these lights, these TVs, these phones, these iPads, it's messing with your brain, okay? And it takes a while for you to come down, even us as adults, to get some good sleep. When we're talking with parents about good hygiene, which includes not just cleaning your body, it's about what you put in your body and how you care for your body. Sleep is a big part of that. And parents will say to us, well, you know, he or she normally gets off, you know, the phone or the videos at 10, or sometimes they play them till 1 or 2, or I'm not really quite sure what time they do go to bed. That's a big issue. It's a really big issue, not just for the fact that you're depriving yourself of sleep, but what are you introducing to yourself? You know, are you on these social media sites? Are you comparing yourself to these supermodels, these movie stars? What are you doing with your time that you're on this phone? And how is that playing into your overall mental wellness and mental health? So it's just a little bit bigger than sitting down and saying, you are going to get off the phone, or why are you on this website? It's a conversation that happens.
Screenagers is a movie documentary that was shown in several of the schools in the Valley, and it takes a good hard look on the effect of the brain that cell phone and screen time usage has on the teenage brain. I will say one reason that I found the movie acceptable and helpful was that it didn't just slam teenagers for their screen use. It also took a good hard look at the adults and what the adults are modeling to their young people around screen time. So while it was focused on teen screen use and the effects of the brain, it wasn't just teens are bad because you're on your screens, which I appreciated. Prep took some adults and some teenagers to one of the screenings, and we had one youth and her mother attend, and then they had some after effects that I'll let that youth talk about.
I use my phone a lot. Well, I like used to use my phone a lot, and so did my mom. We would literally go into the living room together to spend time, and we would be watching videos, texting other people. After watching the movie, at first my mom would keep giving me these looks, and she's like, you don't need to use your phone that much. And then I started saying how parents use their phone a lot, and she was just really quiet and like wouldn't look at me, and I was like, see, it's both of our issues. When we drove home, we talked about it and why she uses her phone and why I use mine. And I like kind of realized that I only use my phone because I see other people doing it. So it's like, you're on your phone and you're probably not doing anything, but I'm gonna pull out mine and like start looking through my pictures because I'm bored and you like obviously don't want to talk. And I like see it a lot when you're like in a situation with other people and you don't talk to anyone. The first thing you're gonna do is pull out your phone and try to do something with it. With your family, when you don't want to talk, you pull it out so they know that you don't want to talk. Your iPhone has this thing where you can put like a time limit on apps. Now I have time limits on certain apps where I won't spend too much time on them and keep getting my weekly average of like the time I spent on my phone like down. My mom does the same thing. So now instead of like texting each other from our rooms, she'll like walk into my room and like try to like spend time with me, and like so would my dad. I told my friends about it and they like kind of do the same thing instead of like all laying down on our beds and like using our phones and texting each other while we're like in the same room. It's like we like talk about it. But it was just kind of like weird to like see that everyone, your phone is kind of like your safe buddy to like use and like do things with when you don't know what else you're supposed to be doing. I don't really use my phone in bed because like if I do, I'll be tempted to like keep grabbing it. I have a really bad sleeping schedule. I like started using my phone like outside of my room, like charging it outside of my room so I wouldn't use it. My sleep is just messed up. But I like stopped using it like in school or like when I'm with my family and stuff like that. It was hard at first because I was always like tempted to like grab it or like at least hold it. And then my friends at first would like send me stuff and they'd be like, look at it. And I'd be like, or you could just like talk to me. And they'd be like, no, look at your phone. And I'd be like, it's kind of hard to not want to look at your phone when like everyone else has their phone out. So it's kind of hard to like communicate with them when they're like looking at their phone and like trying to talk to you. But like it got better. So like when someone's talking to me, I try not to use it. But it still kind of like gets me at times, but it's better.
With the phone thing, at least for me, it was kind of a control thing. And when they would take away my phone or whatever, I kind of freaked out. And it was just kind of because I was up until like 3 a.m. each night trying to convince my friends not to kill themselves. So when they would take away my phone, I was like, they're going to die and I'm going to wake up and they're not going to be here anymore. So that was kind of my issue. Definitely agree with the building the trust thing from a young age. And it's definitely not too late to like start as a teenager. But I don't know. I like what you were saying with the screen age, like the on your phone thing, because even walking in here I was kind of like, oh, nobody wants to talk because they're on their phones. But that's part of me not knowing how to start conversations. There just needs to be a balance, and I think it's kind of hard to find that balance. My friends' parents will like sometimes take away their phones when they do something wrong or whatever, they'll go through and delete everything off their phone. They'll delete pictures, they'll delete texts, they'll go into their Snapchat and delete those pictures. And like, I'm not on any social media, but like clear history, they do everything because they're afraid of their parents finding out. And that's kind of, that was my like, when you were talking about that, that was my like, maybe that's a thing to think about. But it's also like, I think the issue with some parents is connection and that respect isn't there, and I think that's actually like really interferes with people's mental health too. And I think that's kind of a big issue that's overlooked, the parental situation.
There is something to be said about privacy, and I think that you all deserve your privacy as we do as adults. As a parent and an adult engaged with youth or having children, in my mind, it's their job to guide and mold and direct. So having that trust from the very beginning and opening up that dialogue at a very young age is crucial.
Teens and adults share their parting thoughts and advice.
Reach out even when it's uncomfortable. Like, don't hesitate to talk. Again, find the appropriate space, like, take the pressure off, but ask directly and don't be afraid. Like, even when it's just your friend or a random person, just reach out because you could be the difference.
Some advice to the parents: don't jump to conclusions when you're talking to your teen, because some adults think that you're just feeling like that because you're not doing anything and you're not getting out of the house. Listen to your teens. Just listen to them and don't really make anything up and just let them talk. Some advice from, like, personal kind of, like, story, I guess. So it does get, like, dark and, like, rough at times, and, like, it is hard to try to, like, say something, you know, because being a teenager kind of feels like you're changing, so you don't really, some people don't see the signs that you're feeling bad. Sometimes you don't even see the signs yourself, you know. After you get so low and, like, in such a dark place, it feels like nothing's gonna get better, but it does. It genuinely does, and it does take a time and effort from your part and, like, trying to say something and from people helping you. But in the end, it's, like, worth it, because you look back and you're like, dang, like, I just did that. I can get through anything else, you know?
I would just add that connection is something that the Aspen Hope Center preaches. For a parent to be connected with their child, for me as an adult to be connected with my adult friends, for youth that are in school to be connected with your peers. We find that people who are in those dark places that I spoke about earlier, they don't feel connected. They don't feel a sense of purpose. They don't feel as if they belong. They feel that if they left this world, nobody would care and it wouldn't matter. Back to what I was saying, baseline human behavior. If you are seeing people that you know change right before your eyes, whether it's their mood, whether it's their recreational activities, whether it's their drug and alcohol use, whether it's their health, if you are noticing changes in somebody that you love and that you care about, ask. Ask. Hey, I've noticed over the last couple of weeks that you have been whatever, fill in the blank. You've been a little bit more irritable. You've been a little bit more angry. You have made these comments about wanting to go to sleep and not wake up. You've made these passive comments in jest about wanting to kill yourself. I'm worried about you. I care about you. Letting people know that you care about them and love them is huge. Think about that for yourself. If somebody comes to you and says, I care about you, I love you, it gives you some sort of a purpose, right? That your life is meaningful and that your life matters and that somebody wants you on this planet. So ask, ask questions, be connected.
And online with the connectedness, somebody recently put an idea into my head that has sort of given me a new perspective of how I look at people who are on their phones a lot and looking at social media platforms a lot, not even necessarily engaging, but seeking that out. And the notion was that if somebody is going onto social media platforms a lot, and even if they're not engaging, then perhaps they're looking to be a part of a family, even if it's just a social media family of strangers and not people you necessarily know, but that still show up as your friend. Now, when I see somebody who doesn't seem to be suffering or having any problems per se, but they're spending a lot of their time with their screen and social media and not those real life face-to-face conversations without the phone or the screen, then I start looking at that as that person needs to belong to a family. So let me extend an invitation and invite them into mine. And I think that can be a powerful way for adults to not pass judgment that kids are always on their phones all the time. Maybe they're on it because they're seeking connectedness. They may not be getting it in that regard, but that's where the adults or the peers can step in and say, in their head, this person looks like they need to be connected. I'm going to be that link to help.
That was interns from Garfield County Prep talking with Carmen and Paula from the Aspen Hope Center, Safira from Project We Care Colorado, and Diana, the Prep Program Manager, about suicide prevention and the positive impact of healthy relationships and candid communication. I'm Stacy Stein. Thanks for listening to the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program. One last suggestion is to put suicide prevention numbers in your phone right now so they are there if you or someone you know is thinking about harming or killing themselves. Colorado Crisis Services is at 1-844-493-8255 and is online at coloradocrisisservices.org. The Hope Center has a local hotline that is staffed 24 hours a day to help people experiencing any type of crisis. They are at 970-925-5858 and online at ourhopecenter.org. To listen to part one of this conversation and other youth radio programs, visit azyep.org.